I worked for a government agency you never heard of. They took my son away from me. They needed him, so they just took him. Keep your hand in your lap, Marty. It's a frightening power these people have. They can make anybody disappear anytime. Somebody's got to stop them.
Yeah, well, that's right. And if you don't mind my making a suggestion, maybe we can help.
Yeah, you see, Peter, Marty and myself have had a lot of experience dealing with the,
people like kicking other people around.
Yeah, harassing them.
I got an idea.
Hey, that's a terrific idea,
Marty. Why don't we stop for some coffee?
Yeah, don't stop! Let's get the hell off this drive. We're like sitting ducks down.
All right, easy, man, easy. We're on your side. We're just trying to help.
Chase 1 to Top Guy 1. We've got him on the lower drive. Do you copy?
Chase 1, copy. We're right above you.
Two sedans have been following us, standard government issue.
He's right about that.
Bob.
Yes, sir.
I want you to lose those cars.
Lose?
That's right.
Well, how do you suppose
There's
I should go about?
There's a construction site other side of the bridge. When we get there, I want you to follow my instructions exactly, understand? Bob, if they can make me disappear, they can make you disappear, too.
This is the emergency podcast system. This is not a test. Movies are bombing all over the country. They are posing as movies you already know. They may already be in your theaters, your neighbor's home, or even your own. Do not panic. Specialists have been dispatched. They will help you identify these pretenders and defend you against this invasion of the remake. Please stand by for further instructions.
Welcome to the Invasion of the Remake podcast. I am your host, Jason Bishop, and with me today, as always, is Sam Stepanenko.
I totally read your mind about the movie we're doing this week.
And she was furious with me, so she stayed in Vulcan, Trish Coughlin.
No, I wasn't furious. I was just really nervous about my eye glow.
I know you get a little
self-conscious.
Yeah. Yeah, this week starts October. It's the first week of October, so we're going to be diving into horror movies for the next month or so. It's going to be fun. We're going to be starting with The Fury from 1978. I previously covered this on a 31 Days of Horror in a very short form. Now we're going to be all talking about it and coming at it. This is an interesting one because, you know, early works of Brian De Palma and 70s sometimes commits a lot to film that doesn't always need to be there.
Yes. Yeah.
I think that's probably the major problem with this movie.
Yeah. I would say right now that he'd just done Carrie and then he went to do this. Carrie was much better than this.
Yes.
Yes.
In so many ways.
I still think this is a solid film, but tonally it kind of goes up and down a little bit. There's definitely some stuff there that's in the movie that I think is just self-indulgent. Like, it doesn't need to be there at all.
Oh, for sure.
For either comedy's sake or just add a little action, but ultimately doesn't drive the story forward. And that might be a problem, too, with the writing, because the script is by the novelist, John Ferris. And if you don't have a lot of experience writing scripts, it's a different animal. Mm-hmm. And he might have been a little too precious with his novel.
Yeah, I'd have to say you're probably right. And I mean, this movie had an identity crisis. Was it a spy thriller? Was it an action movie? Yeah. Was it a horror movie? Was it a science fiction movie? Was it a comedy? Like, there's just so many threads in there that none really get pulled on properly.
Yeah, and in our, well, that's one of the first things we're going to have to decide when we remake this is what we want it to be and focus on that tone.
Well, I can tell you what it should be, because I was thinking about this morning, is this movie, to me, feels like it almost inspired Stranger Things in some parts.
Mm-hmm. Right? Okay, yeah.
Right? Because you have the older brother figure, kind of, and then you also have the younger, new to their powers kind of figure, and that conflict, and the one's gone bad and the other's good. It's like there's a lot of what Stranger Things is now is in here.
Okay, so we need synth music. Okay.
Yeah. For sure. But it's a good example of how this type of story can be done well.
Yeah.
Yes.
right? Because you even have the evil government organization.
Yeah. And we've got to be careful, too. We've covered Carrie. Carrie's been remade. We've covered Scanners. So we're going to have to be a bit clever.
Yeah. Well, actually, I was thinking we could put this in the Scanners universe.
I mean, you easily could. Other things happening from a different angle, right? Yeah. Like, there's Scanners all over the world, and this could easily be one of them. You could literally watch this as a prequel to Scanners.
Yeah, absolutely. I was thinking that as I was watching it.
Because, I mean, my big beef with the movie was you have this huge setup at the beginning, this conspiracy, this false flag event to get one guy with psychic powers.
Yes.
But for what?
And they've established that there's an institution that trains people with psychic powers.
Yeah. Again.
Yeah.
For what?
Yeah.
Which like never, you get Childers.
Yeah, we get the why, but we never get the what.
Yes.
What for? Why? Well, why are we doing? Well, I guess we don't get the why either.
No, I mean, they do kind of establish that they're trying to turn him into a weapon.
Yeah.
But it's clumsy. And his story's told through the flashbacks for the most part. And then when he pops up, his journey feels incomplete because he goes from that being that nice sort of kid and his father's son to being this very damaged, very powerful, psychically powered being.
Yeah, we never get to see his road to power corrupts.
Exactly.
And
what they did to him to do that.
Yeah. We get a little bit of a sense, but he gets taken, and then for the next hour and a half,
it follows Gillian, who really serves very little purpose aside from being a guide.
Yeah, and she... she's the one they're already eyeing to help find Robin, who is the kidnapped son. And that goes south because they're already watching her.
Uh-huh.
And yet it all happens anyway.
It's clumsy. It's so clumsy.
Like, right. I mean, there's so much could be tightened up. I mean, I kind of like these longer 70s movies where they do kind of meander a little bit. Makes it feel more real, but at the same time, the current audiences, younger generation, don't have that kind of patience.
Well, no, especially when the stories don't really take you where you need to go, right? I mean, I'm fine with parallel stories, and I'd like to see the parallel stories.
Yeah.
Right? But
we didn't really get that.
We didn't get that. And that's the problem with this movie, is there is a parallel story, but we don't get to see it.
Yes.
And then we had Peter's journey with that really weird chase scene with him in a towel.
Yeah, Peter being the father of Robin, the kidnapped son.
I actually remembered a name. How about that?
Presumed dead, but he's secretly trying to find his son and rescue his son
he's a super spy.
Yeah.
Yes. He's been working at the quote-unquote agency.
The agency.
For many, many years.
Yes. But Kirk Douglas at 61...
Yeah, I think he was even older now.
No, I think he was 61 when this film was shot. Okay. I'm pretty sure I read that. But regardless, he was
I know he awkward. Was in his 60s.
Yeah, he was awkward all the way through the movie. And I think part of it, too, is the only person who took the making of this film seriously was Amy Irving. Everybody else was phoning it in, and they said they were.
Yeah, and I get it. Probably the script looked pretty bad to them at the time.
Yeah, and he has gone on record saying this is one of his least favorite films that he's directed as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I can see why. It doesn't have a lot of the De Palma hallmarks that were even in President Carey were missing from this. The scene when Hester dies, spoiler.
Yeah.
And that long shot on Kirk Douglas's face, just sort of staring out of the cab. It's like, okay, that was 40 seconds I'm not getting back.
Yeah.
Like, hey, they're coming for you. Step on the gas. Yeah. Mourn later.
Exactly.
I was yelling at my TV.
Yeah.
Good. I mean, I'm not the only one then.
Well, I was sitting there watching that guy running up to Amy Irving and going, get your head in the game.
And how long does it take to run up to a person?
He's wearing like jogging gear. He's set up for it.
Yeah. Like there's a lot of like stuff in here that was obviously set up to create tension, but instead just felt dumb. I'm not going to say awkward. It was dumb.
Yeah. It's interesting when you're coming off such a similar film with Carrie. Yeah. And
which was quite fast-paced for such a slow burn.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it does make you wonder about the novels, too, because there's four of them
that
I'm aware of.
That's what I read, was there's four in the series. And I mean, it has all the earmarks for a series of books. And if this were the first book, it makes complete sense why it was such a slow burn and was a little confusing and didn't really because there's all these threads that tie together later that we don't get to see.
Like, when you watch this, you can see all this stuff going on and all these characters. It's a busy movie. And the first thing I thought was, like, miniseries.
Yeah.
If you're going to spend this kind of time, spend this kind of time. Establish the motivations, establish each character properly so we really can identify with them all. Do all of that stuff and take your sweet ass time. But what we got here is, I think, at least my approach was, is coming from an MK Ultra kind of scenario.
Yes.
So we can turn this into a horror thriller, political horror thriller.
Yeah.
Trim off some of the fat.
Well, yeah, and there's lots of places you can do that. One is by establishing, I'm not sure if it's Jillian or Gillian, because they said it both ways in the movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's Gillian.
It's Gillian. But... yeah, but I know a Jillian spelt that way too, and they did say it both ways. So like I said, I'm confused, I was confused a little bit by which pronunciation was correct. But establish it right off the bat that she's already been accepted into this school instead of going through all that drama that with the setup of her going through that exercise, which is really cool, but unnecessary.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think we could shave off all of that high school trauma. She's clearly in her 30s.
Yeah.
And have her already set up and established in the school.
Yeah, or about to go to it.
Or about to go to it. And then we can kind of discuss some of that stuff with the people, like what got you here. And
exactly. Like, why was Hester in that scene with the train? I didn't understand why she was there when she was entirely unrelated to Jillian's journey at that point.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it was very confusing when she showed up later at the center.
Yeah.
Like, it was very nonsensical to me as to why that character was there at that time.
Yeah, it was just a case of using the actors you got and establishing them in the world. But, man, do they all live, like, five blocks away from each other?
Exactly.
Yes. I mean,
if they'd established that she was there to scout potential psychic talents, it would have made sense. But they never said that, so it didn't make sense that she was there.
Yeah, and that might be a good change for her.
Yeah, because she's just an admin, even when you get later in the movie.
Well, I mean,
like, she's sort of a nurse slash admin.
When we see her at the school demonstrating energy from psychic ability, even if any human can do it, and I think that was to establish that she was just a normal person. But if she had some abilities to detect, like she's their sniffer dog.
Yeah.
You know, she can... Yeah. She might not have a ton of talent, but she could recognize it when she sees it.
Yeah, she can feel it or
she can find it.
Yeah.
Or recognize it through the tests that they do.
Or that's particularly her talent.
Is recruitment. This is a difference between a school like Xavier's school.
Yes, for mutants, I thought that too.
And then the Brotherhood of Evil Mutants on the other side.
Yeah.
Which would be the government.
Yeah.
Yeah, when we saw Charles Durning, I'm like, well, should I put Patrick Stewart in that role? I don't know.
Resist the bald person. Resist the bald person.
I know, right? Him or James McAvoy, I'm like, no, that's too on the nose.
Yeah, trust me, I thought it too. We all thought it.
I didn't. I should have, but I didn't.
Well, I'm horribly disappointed at you. I would have been more disappointed if you'd done it, but...
You know I'm never going to go with that kind of casting.
Yeah. So, I mean, at its core, this is a thriller, a lot of running, chasing, and a lot of just building of... I mean, Jillian, it's her movie. That's why I feel like it's like there's three separate stories. There's Peter's trying to find his son. There's Jillian learning to control her powers and the accidents that happen and how she moves from high school to this school for gifted youngsters. And then there's Robin's journey, which we barely see.
Which is in the Black Ops mansion.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because he thinks his dad's dead.
Yeah.
I had the wildest thought partway through the movie, and it's because I'd seen it before, but like a very long time ago. And my whole thought was like when Gillian was getting these memories and these images, I was like, oh, he's in a coma or he actually is dead. And she's just getting these echoes. And that's what I thought for a very large portion of the film.
And that's actually something they did do well is leaving you that question. Is Robin alive or dead?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right.
And I think that might be why they didn't do the parallel journeys because they wanted you to think that he actually was dead. Right.
But why? I never thought that.
I know.
Because why go through all this rigmarole to do a false flag terrorist attack on a beach.
Yeah.
And then to take this guy, to take this son, and then kill him? That makes no sense.
Oh, no. See, for me, it wasn't they killed him. It's just they pushed him so hard
that he didn't survive.
He eventually shut down and he didn't survive.
Right. Well, yeah, I never thought that, but I'm trying to remember if I did the first time I saw this.
I think that they do a good job of making you wonder it, but because, like Jay said, it doesn't make sense they would do it, but they still did it well enough that if you were less film savvy, you might fall for it.
Maybe. I don't think I've ever thought that. Yeah, I don't think I ever thought
less film savvy.
I mean, I kind of like the psychometry stuff, and that way you know Robin was in this school at one point and his struggles.
Well, and that's the thing, is they established the school early on in that first opening scene, which went way too long. But they do establish the fact that he's going to this school. And that's a nice parallel that a year later, Jillian has been accepted into this school. And she thinks it's an honor. That makes sense to me that she would be excited to be going to this school because she knows that she has powers, but she doesn't know how to control them. And then you could have some training accidents where she makes people bleed accidentally, that kind of thing, which was where the horror really comes from in this film, because otherwise there's not a lot.
Yeah, there isn't a lot, but we will definitely talk about more horror. Once we run the trailer, we'll get back on the Ferris wheel.
Juan, what do you mean, Juan? You did not.
There are no secrets between father and son.
Come on, Dad, you saw it.
Except one.
You have a talent that would shock the hell out of people. But it's a talent that else can be put to good use.
For lovers of the shocking, the suspenseful, and the terrifying, comes a new classic, The Fury.
Read my mind.
Look, I don't know anything about reading minds, all right?
The Fury, an experience in terror and suspense.
They took my son away from me. They needed him, so they just took him.
What the hell have you done to that boy?
Oh, he's being treated like a prince. He's royalty, unique. Chinese don't have one, Soviets don't have one. In all the world, there's no one quite like Robin Sansa, unless it's this girl.
Who's Robin Sansa? He's a boy your age, with powers like yours.
Powers that build. And build. Until they become the Fury.
I want Gillian Belliver at the PSI facility tomorrow.
It's a frightening power these people have. They can make anybody disappear anytime.
She's a fake. I'm sending her home. I don't have time to waste on people. Don't do that to me, Doctor. Don't ever try lying to me.
Gillian? Where is Robin now, Gillian?
What's the matter, Robin?
You know what's the matter.
Stop! Gillian!
That girl's taking my place after you poisoned me!
The Fury is the power that holds the key to all power.
Peter, I was lying before. Robin's not okay. He needs us now.
For lovers of the shocking.
Robin?
The suspenseful.
Please answer me.
And the terrifying.
Robin!
Comes a new classic. 20th Century Fox presents a Frank Yablons presentation.
Don't you recognize your old man?
The Fury.
Ah! Peter!
The Fury, a Brian De Palma film. An experience in terror and suspense.
All right, that was a trailer for The Fury from 1978, directed by Brian De Palma, who has a hell of a resume: Scarface, Untouchables, Carlito's Way, Mission Impossible, and of course we talked about him in episode 175.
Which we've already mentioned, Carrie.
That's right. Written by John Ferris. He wrote the novel and the screenplay. Might know him from Dear Dead Delilah. Probably not. I didn't know that movie existed, but it's a great title. This stars Kirk Douglas as Peter Sansa, and yes, he was 61. I wrote it down.
There you go.
He was 61 when he did this movie, but he died at like 104.
Yeah, had a long, long life.
Long, long life, long career. You might most remember him being in Spartacus. We talked about him one other time in episode 26.
He was in Oscar. I actually didn't miss Oscar this time.
That's right. I was wondering if you would. John Cassavetes was Childress. Childress being the best friend of Peter, Kirk Douglas, but not really. He's scouting for his evil government empire thing or whatever.
Yeah.
I'm not sure what they always say, secret organization of the government, but you know.
I did read that it had a name. I didn't write it down, but they never say it in the movie.
No, they don't. Carrie Snodgrass is Hester. Hester has a relationship with Peter, or at least forms one in the movie. And she's the recruiter for the school. She goes to high schools and she does these little tests and things. And then anybody who shows ability, they offer them tuition at this school.
Yep.
Carrie Snodgrass was in Wild Things and Pale Rider. Charles Durning is that guy you saw in that thing that one time.
Yes, he certainly
is. He's definitely one of the great character actors of his generation. He plays Dr. Jim McKeever. And might be best known for Dog Day Afternoon. We did talk about him in episode 306.
To be or not to be?
That's correct. Amy Irving is Jillian Bellaver. And we've been talking about Jillian a bit. She's recruited into this school by Hester. And Peter's also hoping she can help him find his son. And she was in Traffic and also in episode 175.
Carrie.
In fact, Brian De Palma wanted his lead from Carrie. I can understand why she didn't want to do another one of these.
I can understand that. And in all fairness, I don't know that Sissy Spacek would have been the right person for this role.
Yeah.
I think Amy Irving was. Yeah. I just think that, yeah, she got the short end of the stick on it in the end.
Yeah, she busted her ass on this one.
Yeah.
Much to most of the actors, like, stop taking this so seriously. Yeah. But, you know, she saw this as a big break and that would make her a breakout star.
Yeah. John Cassavetes actually said, it's not Shakespeare.
Yeah. And yeah, it didn't make her a big star. So there you go. Fiona Lewis was Dr. Susan Charles. She was in Inner Space. Dr. Susan Charles was on the evil side of things with Childress, helping train Robin and also sleep with him.
Yes, she was seducing him as well. I'm sure that was part of the manipulation tactic.
Yeah. And that she's probably her doctorate's a psychological one, I'm sure.
Yeah, but skeevy.
Skeevy. Andrew Stevens plays Robin Senza, and he was in The Terror Within, both of them. One and two. Did you know there was a two?
I did, because I read his IMDb.
Well, did you know that beforehand?
No.
No, I didn't know either. Carol Eve Rosen was Dr. Ellen Lindstrom. She was in The Stepford Wives. Rutanya Alda was Kristen, and she was in The Dark Half, Deer Hunter, and episode 6.
The stuff.
That's right. And then I just wanted to mention a few fun cameos here. Dennis Franz was Bob. You best know him from Die Hard and NYPD Blue. Poor Bob was a police officer who lost his brand new car to Peter.
Brand new Cadillac.
Brand new Cadillac. Peter was an asshole.
Yeah. And that scene was funny and it felt so out of place because it was funny, but it was funny.
It was funny. I liked the scene. Really added nothing to the movie.
No.
Actually, most of that sequence, you know, they find him in the hotel, he greases up, holds a family hostage, makes friends with the grandma.
Again, funny, but unnecessary.
Funny, unnecessary, gets his disguise, goes out into the world.
And gets spotted right away.
Yeah. So why did we have all this?
No purpose whatsoever. No.
Gordon Jump was Knuckles, and he's best known for WKRP in Cincinnati. And Daryl Hannah makes her debut, I think.
Yeah, it's a brief,
appearance. I didn't even catch it. Plays a character named Pam. She was in Blade Runner Splash, and we talked about her in episode 141.
Attack of the 50-Foot Woman. She was the high school student who was sitting at the end of the table who saved a spot for somebody, and then Jillian sat down in the spot she was saving.
Oh, that was her.
Yeah, for the nasty girl with the glasses.
Okay. And that was where Jillian gets angry and causes people to bleed.
Yes, that was the first time where she makes somebody bleed.
Yeah.
Accidentally, this is where she discovers her that she actually has powers, I guess, right?
Yeah, well, that's the traumatic mutant thing.
Yes. Which I don't think we need it here.
No. Well, no, because if we establish her presence already, like she's been recruited.
She's already been scouted and recruited.
And we can trim that back down as a flashback or something.
Yeah, it's just something simple, right? Like the train sequence was fun, right? Where they're making the train move. That seems to me like a really great logical scouting trick.
Yeah, and that could be something they practice, like one of the abilities they use at the school, right? Like they...
Yeah, practice control.
Yeah, right? To practice control.
Yeah, so they can control the level of output that they're using or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what we can establish as Jillian's issue is the bleeding is because she can't control her output.
I called it like psychic feedback.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like having like a knob on your mixing board or one of those rheostat light controls where you can turn it up and turn it down. And she does, hers is just a switch.
Yeah. It's on and off.
On and off and powerful.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. And I like that. I mean, we could even use that analogy in our remake.
Yeah. I like how when she was in the school, there was a board kind of showing the different abilities of psychic talent. I actually wound up looking this up because their board had like six. And then so I went to Wikipedia. There's a whole lot more.
I'm sure.
I want to read these off and see if like these spark a few ideas for psychic abilities. Some of these are a little crazy, but astral projection, which is out of body experience, atmokinesis, which is the ability to change weather, bilocation, which is to be present in two places at the same time, cryokinesis, the ability to control ice or cold with one's mind, energy medicine, using energy to help heal. There's something called a curse, which an expressed wish that some form of adversity or misfortune will befall the attached to one person. That's too supernatural, yeah. I think. Ergokinesis, the ability to influence the movement of energy such as electricity. Hydrokinesis, I think we all know that's controlling water. There's a Buddhist meditation technique called Idhi, they list here. And Inedia, the ability to survive without eating or drinking.
That's no fun.
Now, levitation.
Which we see in this movie.
Yeah. Materialization, the creation of objects and material or appearance of matter from unknown sources. Mediumship, which is channeling with spirits. Petrification, the power to turn living being to stone.
Ooh.
Prophecy. We do see a bit of that.
We see a bit of that. That's in Jillian.
Yeah.
And I think that that's actually, as you're reading this off, I think that that's the thing. They clearly manifest multiple abilities throughout the movie, right? When you see Robin, he's got the power of levitation. Mm-hmm. He's got the power of telekinesis. Mm-hmm. So he's got both of those. And she obviously has prophecy and whatever it is, it causes people to bleed. It's some sort of...
Yeah, there's a whole bunch more. Telekinesis, shape-shifting, pyrokinesis, which we talked about in Firestarter, photography, which is taking pictures with your mind and then burning it into...
That would be a cool power.
That would be
useless for this movie, but it would be a cool power.
Well, if he used it in the form of... And with the combination of prophecy, right?
That could actually... No, you're right. That could actually be really cool.
Yeah. Something called witnessing. That's spiritual stuff. Oh, that's like... I just saw like Mary or Jesus in toast. We're not going to use that. Xenoglossy, the ability of a person to suddenly learn or write or speak a foreign language. That's kind of cool.
That is kind of cool.
And then extrasensory perception, including clairvoyance, divination, dowsing, dermo-optical perception, the ability to perceive the unusual sensory stimuli through one's own skin.
I feel things real good.
Yeah, I feel it. I feel it hard. divination, dousing, dermo-optical perception, dream telepathy, phytokinesis, the ability to control plants, precognition. We do see that in this movie. Psychometry, which we should have just grouped dermo-optical perception into that, because that's basically being able to see through touch. Remote viewing. We see there's a little bit of that in this movie. Retrocognition, the ability to supernaturally perceive past events. We see a bit of that in this movie. And telepathy, which we see a lot of in this movie.
Yes. So most of those are like disciplines of the main six, in all fairness. They're just fine-tuned down to very specific disciplines within this sort of six that they identify.
Mm-hmm.
So we can use them ad nauseum and however we want to use them. We talked about scanners and sort of linking this into the scanner's world, which essentially focused on one ability.
Yeah, I don't know if I'd want to do that or if you could even legally do that.
No, it was just funny because you could set it up quite easily as part of that scanner's universe.
Yeah.
But if we want to have them with multiple abilities and so on, it's actually bigger than that, right?
Well, here's a thought. Okay, so if Peter's gone to Jillian, who's going to this school to try to find her son, she's got the ability of precognition, among other things. But what if he recruits these kids to help siege the castle, in a way? So everybody has their specialties. And we can see a lot more of these things on display.
We could, yeah. And they're starting to feel a little New Mutants to me, but but I'm not averse to that either.
I liked New Mutants.
So did I. So many people didn't.
I'm going to be unduly influenced by the bazillion comic books I've read.
Yes. But yeah, if we sort of create an army of...
Especially if like these guys have attacked the school already, trying to get Jillian. And say we've lost the lovable doctor, the Durning character.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, we know that Childress has black opsed students out of the school. And you always get the sense that Durning's character doesn't like it, but he has no control over it either.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So I think that's sort of your key point is all these kids go missing, never come back, never hear from them again. And it scares the students who knew these kids.
Mm.
Right. And that's where our Peter character sort of has an in because he's aware of Jillian and he's aware of the school because he used to recruit for them.
Mm-hmm.
Not knowing that there was something more nefarious happening after that recruitment.
Mm.
Like he doesn't know about the super secret testing, right? Which is why they attempt to take him out because he got too close to it somehow or something, right? So we can explain that turn.
Mm-hmm.
From Childress and why he decides that he wants to take out or needs to take out Peter. So it sets it up a little more concretely as far as, first off, Peter's role in this company or organization, the role of Robin in things and the role of Childress in things. Instead of these sort of being amorphous good guy, bad guy kind of roles.
Yeah. I mean, Childress, he's essentially a con man. You know, he's telling stories, telling lies to keep Robin on his side.
Yeah, he's
keep that trust.
Yeah, he's walking the line of being that palm rubbing villain, right?
Mm-hmm.
Haha, my master plan is coming together, kind of thing, mm-hmm. right? So yeah, and we don't want that.
No,
right? He's looking for make sure that it's clear that he's looking for weapons, right?
Yeah,
for altruistic reasons.
Yeah, and then we need to see more. Like I can't imagine Robin was the first.
Exactly.
Oh no, no heavens, no.
Like, what if some of his agents out there that are working for him, they're not just agents.
They have powers.
Recruitment. Yeah. They're people who've been recruited.
That's where
the action comes from.
And your horror, too. You can have these horrific psychic battles. We don't necessarily need to see the exploding human being until the end like we did in the original spoiler. But we could definitely see some great horrific stuff in these brief conflicts as we come up to our crescendo at the end of the movie.
Yeah. Well, I was thinking this might be way out of the box, but that initial tipping point where they take Robin away, it could be another agent who's basically making them see a bunch of people shooting at them and they start shooting, but they're not shooting at anybody.
I love that.
That's great.
I love that.
Mm-hmm.
No, that works really well.
And you only find out later when they see the tape.
Yeah, that's a great piece of horror, actually.
That's a very great piece of horror. And even the audience wouldn't know until they see the tape.
Yeah.
And that would explain the explosion where Robin thinks his dad's dead because it was projected. And his dad's hiding in the rocks.
And how his dad survives because his dad thinks the explosion happened.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It sets up some really nice things that you can bring back into the film later on, establish the power and organization that this organization has.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, you know, we can have like Peter again running in the city, takes the cop car. The cops aren't in it this time, but I still want it to be Dennis Franz going, not again.
Yes, please.
And he still runs it off the pier. And then like we can pull in one of these other psychic abilities we just listed, right? Yeah. Like somebody freezes the body of water, or at least the immediate area of the body of water, to keep him from coming back up.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
We could set all that up. Funny blooper there, or continuity error there. That one car went off. That same pair blew up. And then next time he dives into the water. It's like, they hit some hard water. Yeah, which I thought was funny. And yeah, they, I mean, there's some pretty hokey things in this. But yeah, I like it. Liking the idea.
Which is weird because it's very well shot.
It is very well shot. And it just...
So inconsistent.
Yeah. It's like, well, we only have this one spot, so we're going to use it for both shots and hope nobody notices.
Yeah.
I mean, because like they probably had it for a night and they had to take advantage of it.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, no, I like the idea of this becoming, I mean, and this does start moving into Scanner's territory a little bit, this sort of war of psychic powers, right?
Yeah.
But I think we can do it fairly dynamically, and with them having multiple abilities, it takes it out of that Scanner's realm and into something completely different.
Yeah, yeah. We're past the 70s and 80s where bladder effects were the effect du jour.
Yeah.
And the most they could afford was the pulsing vein.
Which is more than they could afford in Carrie.
That's true. He wanted to do it in Carrie.
Which is true. Well, I was just thinking too, this also explains, because I was really confused about this when they went into the construction site, why fog just happened and it was just there.
I don't know, but we had it here this morning. You couldn't see across the street.
We did have it here this morning. It was very spooky. I don't know. I was like, ooh.
Yeah, yeah. I only live across the street from Sam, and I probably couldn't have seen his house this morning.
We
and
could definitely not see the Circle K across the field.
Yeah. My roommate was up in the morning, but wasn't here. Rolled in real quick. By the time he got up again this morning, it was already gone.
Yeah, yeah. It came and went pretty quickly, but spooky.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, we don't
necessarily... Oh, that the weather power that I mentioned.
The weather power, yes.
There is a weather power.
Yeah, so yeah, we can use all of those to obscure things.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, no, I like that, like where we can sort of establish and we can show somebody focusing their energy to do something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that...
To cover what they're doing.
Yeah, that adds so much dimension to this film.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Right, because it's not just a weird chase film about psychic powers. And that's the thing, is it's just a weird chase film. For the most part.
Well,
I mean, so was Firestarter. Yeah.
This is a long runtime, around a little over 2 hours, and large swaths of it are just chasing.
Yeah. Again, like Firestarter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I mean, it gives, like, Childers is just, like you say, he was sort of a caricature, but with additional agents that he's got that he uses.
Yeah. No,
it kind of establishes him more, if you know what I mean?
Yeah. No, he was not very far from mustache twirling. He was sort of this, caricature of a villain.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, it kind of sucks because we're shaving down a lot of Jillian here, but I think if we focus on Peter and him trying to find help, going to this school, and that's where we pick up with Jillian and we can learn a little bit about her and the other students there, while we cut away to tell Robin's story of what has happened since he's been taken from this false flag beach scenario, if we even do that anymore.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. So, and I have an idea for how we make Jillian sort of the forefront of that part of the story is we've established that Robin's more powerful than average. He manifested 2, maybe 3 abilities.
Mm-hmm.
And they can establish at the school, it's like, well, she's more powerful than Robin ever was. She's more raw power. She's already manifested at least 2 abilities that we're aware of.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And if she possibly could have more combined with that power, she's more desirable than Robin to Childress because of the potential.
Yeah.
Right? So we just sort of set it up as that, right?
Yeah.
Because he does indicate that he wants her for his program.
Oh, yes.
Right.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Right. So we have to have that dialogue between the doctor and Childress saying her raw power far exceeds what Robin shows. She's already manifested precognition. She's already manifested telekinesis. Like, she's already manifested, I think in the movie she had manifested, I think, 3 different abilities.
Mm.
Yeah.
That she can't control.
Yeah, plus that whole thing with the blood. So,
yeah.
Which was a very unique way. That was kind of a version of controlling water.
Yes.
But
I'm going to call it hemokinesis.
Ooh.
Blood.
You just coined a new one. I like it.
I like it.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I like that. And yeah, and then that ties in really nicely to the final scene there, right, where she controls it and uses it in a very dramatic manner.
I hated the end part. Like, there's all this fighting between Peter and Robin. Like, Robin doesn't even recognize his dad anymore. Yeah. I mean, there should be initial disbelief.
Because at first, because in a rage, in that red rage mode, it takes him a moment to come out of it. And then the disbelief. And I have a fix for that. Because the other thing, too, is he levitates. He's levitating when they first come into contact. Mm-hmm. And then when he falls, he can't levitate anymore.
Yeah. Oh, that bugged me.
Right. So what I would say, what I thought was a really great solution is when his dad grabs him, he says, "Dad, it's all right. Let's go. I don't want to be this person."
Yeah. He needs to be put down.
Yeah.
And his dad realizes it. I hated the fact that Kirk Douglas throws himself off the edge
killed by Childress's people. It's a simple solution. It gives us the same impact, but it's actually far more tragic.
Yeah. He's made the decision to put his son down, and then now the thing that's most valuable to him is dead, so they can just mow him down. There's no threat of
their new protege standing right there watching everything too, right?
Yeah.
So yeah, it works a lot better than what they did.
Yeah.
Right.
And then we can see her go all Carrie and maybe some of the other students if they've survived or made it there.
Yeah. Yeah, and then you can have
Or she just tells them, "This is where I am. This is where this is all happening.
Yeah.
Let's fix it.
It's over."
Yeah, yeah.
This program is done.
Yeah, I actually love the subtlety of the ending there, where she looks like she's being compliant.
Mm-hmm.
Uh huh.
And then
kisses him on the eyeball, makes him blind.
Yeah, I love that. I thought that was great.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, that shows real control of her power.
Yeah.
And that sort of completes her journey.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So I'd like to keep that a little bit because it's really worked well for me in the ending. That was the part of the ending I did like.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, the clumsy handling of Peter and Robin's end was not good at all.
No, I didn't like
and
that.
It is a fairly simple fix.
Oh, yeah.
And it actually makes it more powerful because Robin recognizes that he can't be saved and recognizes dad and has that final moment of saying, you know, "I love you, but I can't stay here."
Yeah.
Yeah.
I still want, like, even bigger, like the Ferris wheel that, I mean, it's a horrific scene, but looking back on it, I'm like, oh, I mean, in a way, this actually happened. That scene happened here.
Yeah.
That was when I first saw it. Yeah. That was a mall in Chicago that was an indoor amusement park for about 5 years, but this actually happened in West Edmonton Mall.
Galaxyland.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was the roller coaster.
It was a roller coaster, and it lost a bolt.
Yeah.
And I was fine with the scene, but seeing the hokey
all of Arab, it was weird. Yeah.
Yeah, I hope that Arab outfits, which
made it, you know, did you feel like we were in a different city? Like, I thought we were still on the Arab beach.
Yeah. Like, it felt weirdly out of place. But
yeah.
Because they didn't really talk about his indoctrination against...
I mean, I get where maybe... why they had so many Arabs in the scene, because the terrorist attack killed his father, seeing all these Arabs having fun or whatever created that fury in him, thus the title. Yeah. I'm not sure that works anymore.
No, I'm not sure. It definitely does not work anymore. No, I think it's as simple as showing that he's been indoctrinated against a certain culture.
Yeah, and I think that's the point they were trying to go for.
But again, because we didn't see his journey, we don't know this.
No. Right?
Yes.
So that thing, if we show that, and then they set it up as a test. It's not to test his
second false flag. Yeah. It's not like it's not the first time.
Exactly.
Yeah. Right?
So that, because, yeah, it just felt really forced in the original film, as dramatic as it was.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, if you set it up as a test to see if, one, their indoctrination worked, and... if he is in that control of his abilities.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They're like, oh, is he ready to use?
Yeah. 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 Can we put him in the field yet? They did a great job of showing his fury and his temperamental yo-yoing. I think that's something that we obviously have to keep to an extent.
Yeah.
Is that he is angry. But I think his anger should come at the loss of his father. And
yes.
and not being able to trust the relationships she does have.
Yeah, not being a petulant child that he was in this film, which is, again, because the actor looked like he was 30.
Yes.
It's supposed to be me. I got the idea that he was supposed to be similar to Jillian's age, who also didn't look like
she was looked 17. Closer. She looked closer, but no, you're right. Yeah,
and I mean, if you're kind of in that awkward teen stage, you actually are. You can kind of understand that because
your hormones,
your overconfidence, all sorts of stuff. You think you're indestructible. That's all part of being a teenager.
Exactly. And then you have the anger and frustration of the loss of your only parent.
Yeah.
Yes. Right?
And I think that you have to establish that he knows he's being manipulated to an extent by the doctor who's sleeping with him. Like, he gets it.
But even still Childress, who's supposed to be a family friend, but, you know, there should be
be some distrust there as well, I think.
Yeah, he kind of doesn't like him. Yeah. I kind of want him to not like Childress.
You know what? We can establish that in the first scene that he never really does like Childress.
Yeah.
It's like,
nice.
Maybe he can say to his dad that, you know, why do you hang out with this guy?
Mm-hmm.
There's something skeevy I don't like about him. And that could be part of his manifestation of his psychic abilities is he can sense that there's something off about Childress.
Yeah. He's not being honest.
Yeah. So that can sort of set up some of the moments later where his anger gets the best of him.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not this sort of uncontrolled anger that we see in this movie. Mm-hmm. Right?
It's directed anger.
It's directed anger.
Yeah.
And I think that works better.
Yeah. And that kind of goes back to my MK Ultra statements of literally training them to be weapons.
Yeah.
It's so undefined in this movie what they're trying to do, and especially given the length, it should be there.
It should absolutely be there.
Yeah.
Right?
And this is his inability to trust his relationships anymore with the doctor who's seduced him. And he knows he's being seduced and he still can't control that jealousy. And I love that, right? Because he's a young person who still has trouble controlling those emotions.
Mm-hmm. And it doesn't actually have to be the doctor, the psychologist.
It could be another character for sure.
Yeah, it could be another character.
But the reason I think the psychologist works is because not only is she an attractive woman who wants to be intimate with him, but she's also older, and so she becomes sort of like a
surrogate mother.
A surrogate parent, yes. Yeah. And I think that's what would help set him off is the fact that he knows he's been betrayed by this person that he was starting to see as a parent.
Oh, somebody he was trusting.
He was trusting, yeah.
Yeah.
And I think
and you'd have that whole, like, she's a psychologist, like, you just pick a random brain and make me do stuff. Like, he's mad about that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's like, you're using me just like everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. Right?
None of what we've done, what you told me is real. You manipulative bitch.
Yeah. I mean, they sort of have it in the movie too, like, establish her. She's like, I've got to do this.
Yeah.
Like, she's not happy being in a relationship with Robin. She really isn't.
No, and that was actually one of the better performances in terms of conveying that what she's doing with Robin is a performance, right?
Mm-hmm.
Her real wants and desires have nothing to do with Robin, but she's still stuck in this position, right? Uh-huh. And I actually liked that about that character is she actually had depth, unlike anybody else in this film.
True.
For the short time she was on screen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think that that's where we get his fury from, not just sort of uncontrolled fury. It's just fury that he ultimately – that scene is where he loses control of it because all the betrayals have come down at this point and he's aware of
it. Yeah, it's been nearly a year from start to finish of this movie, and that's a long time to be fuming.
Fuming and manipulated.
This fire that's building inside.
Yeah, yeah, and subconsciously knowing that the man who's supposedly taking care of you and training you is responsible for your father's death or your parents' death.
Mm. And subconsciously knowing, like, I think the stress that would build knowing that people around you, their motives aren't pure and you're stuck there. I mean, that's got to be terrifying and very stressful.
Yeah. And I think that, and that's where that second journey needs to happen is showing that how he's manipulated and he knows he's being manipulated, but he can't control it.
Yep. Cool. Well, any other characters we need to kind of figure out, or are we ready to go to casting?
I think we can go to casting.
Yeah.
All right.
Top Guy 2, this is Top Guy 1. Do you have any coffee left?
Top Guy 1, that's an affirmative. I've got about a cup of lukewarm coffee left. You want to negotiate a trade?
Top Guy 2, I have one Hershey bar to trade.
Top Guy 1, I read you. Is that with or without almonds?
All right, asshole 1 and asshole 2. Stop cluttering up this frequency.
This one, man, I had a tough time with this one.
Surprisingly enough, I didn't.
Yeah, I struggled with like every character.
There is one that came to me right away, but it's only because she looks so much like her.
Mm-hmm. Now, if I was going to keep the age groups, like I was thinking, I'm like, well, do I want somebody in his 60s?
See, and I was thinking the same thing too. But I one kept popping in my head. I'm like, nope, not doing it.
One did, and I did do it. So yeah. For my Peter, I went with Daniel Craig.
Very good.
Okay.
Yeah. I had a couple options for Childress. I was thinking maybe Peter Green from Pulp Fiction. Zed's dead, baby. Zed's dead.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
or another actor in the movie, Tim Roth.
Also, ooh. Yeah, he does villainous very, very well.
Yeah, both of them would have been in that role. For Hester, I went with Sally Hawkins.
Okay.
Nice.
Somebody we can get behind, a little older than, obviously older than the students, and would be somewhere closer to Peter's age as well, because there is a romantic connection that builds throughout this movie. For Dr. McKeever, that was a tough one because I kind of wanted to have a character actor in that role again. So I went with Zach Grenier, and he was in Fight Club and the RoboCop remake.
Okay. I still don't know who he is, but okay.
All right. For Gillian, I went with Lulu Wilson. Bring these characters back down to the age they're supposed to be. And she's very talented. You might know her from The Haunting of Hill House and the Becky franchise.
Yes. Oh, yeah. She's so good.
And okay.
There's a second, the sequel coming out.
It's out.
It's out?
It's out.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I might be turning up on our 31 Days of Horror, people.
That's what
I've been wanting to watch that one. So all of us might be hitting that one.
Yes.
We might be hitting that.
Alicia Witt is Dr. Charles. And you might remember her from Urban Legend and 88 Minutes. And for Robin, I went with Noah Schnapp. Schrapp
from Stranger Things.
Yeah, that one. Cool. I was like going through kids around that age. He's a couple years older, which is okay.
Yeah,
you know, that's 19.
Yeah,
it has that a bit of I want him to start a little awkward and but become like mean looking, and I'm like, this might be a little different taking his character from Stranger Things and doing some different stuff with him.
Yes, let him play the kid with the powers for once.
Yeah.
Yes.
And because this is a fairly difficult film, I had to use somebody who I have the utmost of confidence with, who's taken material that's really tough to adapt in the first place. Mike Flanagan.
Yep, I can.
You know what? I thought of him too, but I thought you might use him, so I was like, okay, I'm gonna go a different way.
Yeah, I struggled all the way through this thing, but I was fairly happy with the cast I came up with.
There you go.
Trish, what do you got?
Okay. I went in a weird way with this because Peter, I couldn't figure out for the life of me who I wanted. And then I'm like, you know what? I'm just going to go a completely different way. So I've changed it to PETA, and it's Gwendolyn Christie. She's tall. She's powerful. I could see her being an agent. I would kind of like to see her kick butt that isn't in a steel suit.
Okay. I mean, yep. Didn't have to be a male role.
Nope. Oh, I went female then, as well. So.
Oh, nice. And then I went for Robin, Asa Butterfield.
Okay.
Because he and Gwendolyn have worked together on Flux Gourmet, and they have a good chemistry, and I really like that. For Gillian, I went with Charlene Yee. She was in the Cabin of Curiosities episode, The Viewing. She was the astrophysicist.
Haven't got
to it yet. She's youngish. She's youngish, but she's got like kind of that vulnerability that I really liked with Amy Irving. And she's been in quite a few films. You'd know her if you saw her.
Okay.
For Childers, I went with William Fichtner. Kind of along the same lines.
Yep. Definitely, we're all thinking, well, you and I were thinking in very similar paths.
Exactly.
It apparently has to be somebody in Pulp Fiction.
It does.
Oh, I'm way off the base then.
And for Hester, I went with Anna Gunn because she looks ridiculously like the woman who played Hester.
Oh, yeah.
I couldn't get it out of my head. Dr. Jim McKeever, Eddie Izzard.
Okay.
I like
something
that.
A little different.
Mm-hmm.
And then Susan Charles, the psychologist who's sleeping with him, Kirby Owl Baptiste from The Good Place. And you've seen her in a bunch of other films. You'd know her when you saw her. And then for my director, I went with James Wan.
Okay.
So I was thinking like, you know, Insidious, like some supernatural stuff that he's done. I'm like, maybe we could do that.
But, I thought that too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. All right. decent cast. All right.
Yes, good. Thank you.
What do you got, Sam?
Okay, so for my Peter, and now also female.
For your Peter?
For my Peter, my Peter. For
what's
for
going Peter? On with your Peter?
Well, my Peter's Halle Berry. So that joke, well done, Jay. Making fun of my Peter.
Touching your Peter all the time if it's Halle Berry.
Yes. Liam
Neeson. Gorgeous brunette.
Yeah. Liam Neeson kept popping into my head. I'm like, no.
Well, he does have a particular set of skills.
He does have a particular set of skills, but I didn't want to go that way. So yeah, with Halle Berry, I think she's doing action. She's of the right age.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, she did pretty good in John Wick.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So what I did is I changed Peter to Robin and Robin to Peter. So I just swapped their names. Mm-hmm. So for the new Peter, the son, I went with Miles Truitt from Kin, and he has a small role in Stranger Things. Very talented young actor, and he's of the age. He's probably in his late teens, early 20s at best.
So we're all trying to like make him a little more convincing.
Yes.
Yes.
For my Jillian, I went with Sadie Sink.
You know what? I almost did that.
Yeah. I think that she plays that vulnerability really well in Stranger Things. And I'm like,
there was a visual quality I was going for the psychics as well. I wanted him to have a little off look.
Yeah, and that's actually why I went with Miles Truitt as well, because he has a very unique, almost ephemeral look to him.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, nice. I'm like, yeah, I can see him bringing that intensity too in those moments where he needs to be in rage.
Yeah.
Yes.
For my Childress, I went with Jeffrey Dean Morgan.
Ha-ha!
For my Hester, I went with, I don't know what Hester's name will be now, but Garrett Hedlund.
I like it.
Tron Legacy.
Oh, okay.
He played the lead son character. Yeah. So
okay.
Yeah, and he was also in that Zack Snyder Vegas zombie.
Oh yes, he was. Yeah, yeah. So yeah, I just wanted somebody who has
okay.
sort of a unique look. I don't know if we need necessarily to do the seduction scene. I don't think those are unnecessary, but certainly there's some sort of manipulation happening between Peter or Robin.
Well, like it's a psychological manipulation.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh yeah.
For my Dr. McKeever, I went Jimmy Smits.
Ooh.
Right. Because he is definitely a character actor.
He's definitely
a character actor. Yes, he is. Yeah.
And I'd like to see him play a good guy walking that line, because he's done that so well in the past.
Yes.
And then for my Dr. Charles, I went Ellie Larder.
Oh.
Right.
There we go.
Yeah. Because, I can totally see her playing that sort of somewhat angry. And maybe that's where some of his rage comes from, too, is he's picking up her anger at where she's at.
Oh, that's a good thought.
And it's just feeding the anger he already has.
Yeah.
I love that.
Because, she does angry really well.
Yeah.
She also does seductive really well.
Yeah. And there's a resentment of having to do these things that she doesn't want
to do. And she has no idea that she's feeding all of this that ultimately leads to her own demise.
Yeah.
Oh, that's brilliant.
Oh, yeah. I like that.
And then for my director, I went with Scott Derrickson, who directed Black Phone and Sinister, because he's somebody who handles quiet moments so well.
Mm-hmm.
Like I'm just getting shivers thinking about Black Phone again. Yeah.
Well, then who do we make Ethan Hawke?
Yeah, that's a good point.
He's got to be in there.
He'd be a good Peter, too.
He would be a good Peter as well, But I already went with my Allie.
Not too late. No. There's still a role for you.
He could be
another agent. Could put him in there.
He's too big for a bit part.
He's too big for a bit part. Well, no, he's done bit parts, like cameos and stuff.
I mean, he will.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, what was it? The Glass Onion.
Yeah.
He's in that movie for 2 minutes and that's it.
It's very true.
Yeah.
And it was great.
Yeah.
Yes. Oh, he's great in that just tiny moment. It was brilliant.
But yeah, that was my cast.
For all the movie's problems, it did okay. It had a budget of 5.5 according to IMDb, or 7.5 million on Wikipedia. You pick. Somewhere in there.
That's a range.
Box office wound up being about 24 million domestically. So not bad. I'd say that was
a success for the 70s. Yeah.
Yeah. Actually, yeah, quite a big success considering the lower budget on it. Still probably more than carry cost.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't absolutely.
Remember exactly how much, but that was one of the things. He did get a bigger budget for this.
Yeah.
Based on a success from Carrie.
Yeah. I mean, and there's a lot of locations, a lot of characters. So, they did a lot with this budget.
Yes, they did. Yeah, give us a 2-hour film that could have been 90 minutes. But
IMDb gives it a 6.3 out of 10.
I can see that.
Ooh. Yeah. And we don't do Rotten Tomatoes anymore.
Nope.
No. Thank goodness. Oh. I was thinking about it. That's why I could never do it, because they were lying.
Well, I'm not saying every film on there was paid for, nope. bought and paid for.
Nope. Nope. Jason, I need this. They were lying.
Okay, so you just your shitty guesses. That was nothing to do with it.
Yes, that was it. They were lying.
She was right, but the numbers were wrong. So she was always right.
Yeah. I'm sticking to exactly that.
Exactly right. Not off by one or two, but exactly right.
No,
every single time.
100% on.
Every time. Yeah. But I'm still waiting for those ideas to torture Trish, so let me know.
It's all in good fun.
That's right. Well, we still got horror for you all month long in our regular episodes. We're also doing our 31 Days of Horror Challenge this year. Again. My God. Uh-huh. You guys keep doing this journey with me. And so we're going to be watching 31 horror movies over 31 days of October that we have never seen before. And then we will report back to you sometime in November. So we actually have to get through them. And that's potentially 96 movies we'll be talking about.
93.
Unless we do bonuses, which sometimes happen. Potentially 93 movies or more or less. Probably less. Because there's inevitably overlap.
Yeah. And then there's also the regular ones that we do, like for our regular episodes, which sometimes are ones we haven't seen. So we can count them.
You count them. I rarely do.
I don't either anymore. But
I sometimes do. If I haven't seen him and I'm behind, I'll do it.
Oh, so you just do it to cheat.
It's not cheating.
She's padding.
Well, you know, we all used to do it. For some reason, Sam and I got in our head that it was cheating.
In engineering, we called it the fudge factor.
You need buffer time.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
They still count. You haven't seen them.
Yeah. So, yeah, well, we're going to be doing that challenge. And please, if you're doing your own version of it, send us your list either through our social media or email, or send us a link to a letterbox, or even record yourself in a short audio clip, and we might be able to post it. We'll try to read as many as we can on the air. If not, we'll at least shout you out. And if you have like a letterbox or something, we can link that on our website as well.
Nice. We definitely will.
Yeah. And I guess I should tell you all about it. So our social media, @InvasionRemake on Twitter, X, Invasion of the Remake on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, and Threads. And you can email us invasionoftheremake@gmail.com. You can also do that all year long if you want to send us your suggestions, your corrections, and your comments. And, of course, those fan challenges. Doesn't have to be horror. It also could be comparison suggestions as well, or fantasy remakes. So all those things, you know, let us know what you want to hear next on Invasion of the Remake. And maybe we can make that happen for you.
Yeah, talk to us.
That's right.
Yes.
Another way you can interact with us is to visit our website.
invasionoftheremake.wixsite.com/podcast.
And over there, we've got the full archives. You can see all the episodes we've done. There's also a 31 Days of Horror list as well of the previous episodes and the movies we've covered on those. Links as well to the episodes and to some of your choices as well that we've gotten in the past. So we can send you off and looking at everybody else's stuff too. And there's so much horror to talk about.
Yeah. Yes. Look at those lists to curate your list for this year.
Yeah.
Cause there's a lot of really unique stuff on those lists.
That's right. Yeah. Very unique. And I've already hit like a bunch of stuff earlier in the year, and I'm realizing like, oh, I might have to go back and look at old stuff, but I'm like, oh, there's so much this year that I still haven't seen.
Right.
That I'm excited to see. It's crazy how much great horror is coming out right now. And we can't wait to talk about it.
There's some wonderful, wonderful things where it's like, ooh, that's me when I'm looking up like new horror movies.
Yep. While you're on our website, there's also a button there. It takes you to our TeePublic store. It says store. Go shop at our store. Shop and store.
Yes.
Yes.
It's big and it's orange.
It's big and it's orange and it takes you to our store. Orange like a pumpkin. right?
Yes.
Yep.
So go to our Tee Public store. There's over 70 designs to choose from, including several 31 Days of Horror shirts that Sam's done a spectacular job designing.
And they're glorious.
Yeah, they look like retro movie posters. So go check them out. You're going to love them, and it's a great way to support the show. And you can get those images on t-shirts, mugs, posters, PPE masks, totes, notebooks, all sorts of things. So go check out the designs. Choose one, and you can keep shopping. Once you use our link, you can keep shopping even outside of our store, and we'll get affiliates sales as well. Every little bit helps keep this show free for you every single week. So get yourself something cool, and it helps support the show, and it tells people you like the show.
Mm-hmm.
So thanks for doing that. And thanks for listening. We've got three more regular episodes, and then we're going to be moving into our 31 Days of Horror episodes as well. Got a comparison for you next week. I'm not sure what we're doing yet. Oh, yes, I do. I do want to know what it is. This one's a big one. So come check it out. It's one of those rare times when the stars align in October. Sam knows now.
Yeah, like, my head nodded.
Yeah. I don't know. Oh, I do know. All right. Well, I think that's it for the Fury for this week. Until next week, I've been Jason.
I'm always Sam.
And I continue to be Trish.
And we are out of here.
We only had Robin for a few days, but I think that Gillian really wants to work with us, and she is the best subject for psychic research I have ever seen.
Ellie, even the most backward tribes, the most primitive cultures on Earth would welcome the birth of a Robin Sansa. And in time, he'd become their magician, their prophet, their great healer. But there is no place for these kids in our culture because they're so superior to what we hold sacred. And what a culture can't assimilate, it destroys.